And we begin to explore the Yogacara's psychological model in a little bit more depth. What we've tried to explore inevitably, perhaps rather shallowly, is the essential idea that there is only experience. But, as I said yesterday, the question arises, why is it that we have such a conviction that there isn't only experience, that there is somebody who has the experience and something out there of which experience is an experience? I don't know whether any of you found that in even that little exercise, that a sort of voice emerges which just protests, well, no, there is something there. Of course, probably it's because we haven't fully grasped what's been got at, not surprisingly. But nonetheless, there's this sort of quite strong conviction that's bred into us, you might almost say, that there is somebody having the experience, independent of the experience, and something that is experienced that is independent of it. So how does that arise? That's the question that the text, which is the basis for my exposition, is trying to deal with, is answering. How is it that there are, in technical terms, there is Atman and Dharma? Atman meaning this implied or imputed, inherently existent subject, independent of the experiencing situation, and Dharmas being really existent, self-existent entities out there beyond experience. How is it that we think they're there? The answer is that they are simply aspects of the evolution of consciousness. Consciousness in its unfolding in accordance with causes and conditions leads us to have the ideas of really existent subject, really existent object, grasper and grasped. Because we have that idea, we act in ways that reinforce and reconstruct that idea. And we saw that in this wheel, that as a consequence of our past actions, our moral actions, that is, skillful or unskillful actions, as a consequence of our past cognitions, our interpretation of our experience in terms of a subject and object, we lay down the basis for a new conscious moment, which is known as the Alaya Vijnana. We'll look at these in detail in a minute. Out of that, there emerges an interpretive faculty. That interpretive faculty discriminates the Alaya itself as subject. It sees the sort of root from which it comes as itself, its own subjective reality. And it interprets the objects of the senses as really existing outside experience itself. I'm not surprised you're looking slightly blank, but don't worry, it will get a bit clearer because we're going to go through each of these aspects of consciousness in turn and look at what they really indicate and try to get some way of identifying them in our experience. We're not going to be able to entirely succeed because some of them are sort of beneath conscious experience. So that's the cycle. Because we look at things in terms of a subject and object as really existent, we act in ways, we think in ways, we talk in ways that reinforce a consciousness which is constructed in that sort of way. And it just goes on and on and round and round. What we need to do is to weaken the habit, first of all, by not investing ourselves so strongly in actions that are based upon that belief, and then in dwelling in mental states that are at least relaxations of that belief, and finally, through penetrative understanding, eliminating the belief altogether. habitual clinging on to a subject and an object.